This is Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon on your official home of the Flames, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Okay, let's get it going. Tuesday afternoon. Another edition of Sportsnet Today underway here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Logan Gordon along with you. Coming at you live from the Doug Lacey Basement Systems downtown studios. Flames with a big win last night over the LA Kings. 6-5 the final score. Not an ideal finish to the night for the Calgary Flames, but they pick up a win, and now they get set for 6 in a row on the road, and won't be back at the Scotiabank Saddledome until they welcome in Matthew Tkachuk and the Florida Panthers on November 29th. They'll see Matthew Tkachuk and the Florida Panthers coming up this weekend, by the way. We'll chat lots of Calgary Flames hockey in the next hour. We'll chat with Lou in just moments here to kick off the program like we always do. Plus, we'll dive in with our pal Julian McKenzie from The Athletic. Get some Flames thoughts from him as well, but also dive into his latest at The Athletic. A really good in-depth piece on the big moves for the Calgary Flames this offseason and how it all came to be from their perspective, from Florida's perspective, a lot of the players involved. It was a great piece by Julian, so we'll talk about that with him coming up a little bit later. But let's kick the program off like we always do by heading down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, welcoming in our Flames insider, Peter Labardius. He's brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovation should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group now offering Air Miles Reward Miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca. Good afternoon, Lou. How are you?
I am fine. How are you?
I'm doing good. 6-5 last night at the Scotiabank Saddledome. Flames over the LA Kings. Your thoughts on what was a high-scoring affair from the Saddledome last night, sir?
Well, a fascinating first period in the sense that it was very much what I would call a pond hockey game in the opening 20 minutes. And the Flames were better on the pond than the Kings, even though the Kings outshot them and certainly created a lot of havoc with their speed and their forecheck. But a Calgary team that had not won in 7 games because they couldn't find a way to be just a little bit more opportunistic, made some plays. Jonathan Huberdeau scored to get them going, and Elias Lindholm and company took over a little bit. 11 different point getters for the Flames in one period. Second period was their best, clearly. That is exactly how they wanted to play, and they had the Kings completely on their heels, and had it not been for some great work by Jonathan Quick, which you don't always say in a game where a goalie gives up a 6-spot, I think the Flames do run away and hide. But as this team continues to get better and believe and sort some things out, and there are still things that are required in terms of sorting them out, and you're always getting better and looking to get better regardless of what your record is or what it isn't. A bad goal to make it 6-4 gave the Kings a breath of fresh air. And as everybody who knows who watched it or watched the highlights understands that with 20 seconds left, Jacob Markstrom, who opened the door a bit himself with that fourth goal, absolutely made, you know, the save of the night to make sure his team ended up in the win column.
And third periods have been something we've talked about a lot with this team, Lou, and it was assistant coach Ryan Huska who did the media avail last night in place of Daryl Sutter. And I asked him about that. I imagine that they wanted to have a more tight third period defensively, and that's something that they talked about all season. Here's what Ryan had to say after I asked him that.
Imagine you'd like to see the team buckle down a little bit harder in the third period. It's something that's been a topic this season.
Yep, for sure. And that's, again, it starts with the, you can call it smart, hard hockey, whatever you want. But you don't need to take a penalty when we did. But that came off of a turnover, too, in the neutral zone. So we had the game under control at that point, and it shifted a little bit there. So those are the things that we have to get rid of for sure.
They fed Los Angeles after a second period where there was absolutely no doubt who the better group was. And that's hockey. That is sports. All sports have momentum swings. You know, basketball might be the one game that has the greatest momentum swings or runs, which they are more referred to in that sport. And last night kind of took on that complexion. When one team was good, they were riding the wave, and it happens in games because we talk about it. But last night was a little different. I don't think either team wanted to play that style of hockey. It's not conducive, certainly, to what the Flames want to do. And I know Todd McLellan well enough to know that you know, his concern, even at 10-6-1, is, you know, his team game was very in and out, according to him, not according to me. So, you know, the most beneficial thing for the group right now, as we, you know, break it down day by day and game by game, is I think some people offensively are really turning a corner. It's been great to see Adam Ruzicka find his way. I think last night was by far, at least from my vantage point, his best game maybe ever as a Flame. And, you know, the team scored some goals, which they desperately needed to do.
Well, let's dive into to Adam a bit, because he was on the docket for us today to talk about, and that's a perfect segue into it. And I don't think you'll be surprised by this, Lute. I'm sure you would have heard some of it on the drive home last night while you were listening to Pat. But in the locker room last night, we had Lindholm and we had Toffoli, and both of them spoke glowingly about Adam and the skill that he has. But a word that you use very often came up from both of them, and that's confidence. And they talked that, you know, Adam's starting to get that confidence, and you can see it in his game. Is that sort of where you've seen it too? Would you agree with the sentiment from Tyler and Elias in that sense?
Well, yeah, for absolute sure. I think you could point to almost every situation where a player is trying to find it, and people are trying to find their way. And when your confidence isn't in the right place and your belief in what you do isn't in the right place, you're not going to be at your best. And, you know, I think for Adam, and to me, you know, this is still very much a work in progress, is he had a great summer, got himself in great shape, but really didn't do very much with it in the preseason or in camp. You know, it was a second straight year where I expected him to really take another step. But, you know, he waited his turn. You know, he had an earlier night this season that certainly didn't endear himself to Daryl and the coaching staff. But this time, you know, he's found some success. And in the one area of his game that I noticed last night, that he did a better job of protecting pucks on the boards and using his frame, you know, to shield people off. There's never really been much doubt about the skill level when he's assertive and, you know, takes the game to others rather than waits for it to come to him. But that's something a lot of young players have to get better at as they try to transition in what I call not just being able to play in the NHL, but in order to stay in the NHL and be an everyday player in the National Hockey League. And those two things can take some time. So I thought he skated really well last night too. So it was a fabulous night for the line. They had 8 points, and, you know, Tyler Toffoli has been really, really good this season, and Elias Lindholm, he's the best player on the team right now. There's, for me, it's not even close.
Yeah, he's really rounded into form, and I don't know. Was it a slow start? Sure, it was a little bit of a slower start than maybe we're used to, but the last couple of games, the last couple of weeks, to me, it's just back to, what else do you say about the guy? He's a two-way force. He's unlocked this offensive side of his game the last couple of years, Lou, that makes him you know, as dangerous and as useful to the team offensively as he is defensively, and he's already pretty damn good defensively. So I still think, as far as the forward group is concerned, there are some new names involved, but for me, the importance level, you know, the conversation starts and ends with 28.
Well, yes. I know, again, whether it's the talks even we've had about Jonathan Huberdeau or earlier with Elias Lindholm, and in fact, you know what my theory was early in the year in terms of in playing with Toffoli and even Huberdeau, I don't think he had the same kind of overall responsibility to glue it all together that he might have with his old line mates. And I truly believe in my heart of hearts that, you know, that put him a little bit on his back foot and trying to potentially, you know, learn how to go about his business with other people who are A, different players, different style, but probably in some areas don't require as much. And even though, you know, in Jonathan's case, still, you know, trying to find it systems-wise. But the one thing nobody can ever say about Jonathan in a game, at least I can't, is I don't ever watch him play a game and go, you know, he's not engaged. He's not in the middle of it. He's not being physical. He's not blocking the shot when he has to. I mean, he hurt himself doing it in the game in Long Island where he blocked three. So I do. I think even the change, you know, with Huberdeau leaving that line, because, and I use this quote all the time about him, I think the one guy who still to this day probably doesn't understand how great he is him. And so when you bring in a player with Jonathan Huberdeau, I think the tendency sometimes is, hey, I got a great guy. Everybody's talking about how this is the best passer in the game and I might get 50. And so maybe you're off it because you're deferring a little bit and you're getting used to somebody that's new and different, which can affect how you go about your business. So, you know, it really isn't much different. You know, the analogy I can make, and, you know, I've worked with a million different people in my career and, you know, doing games together in a booth or doing shows together on the radio or doing, you know, highlight shows on television, Logan, and everybody's different. It takes some time. Chemistry with some people is instant. With some people, it never happens. And it's not because they're not good at what they do. It's just whether it's philosophically, whether it's, you know, both people are trying to be the alphas. You know, that's how good chemistry develops. And I think for Elias, it was different. I do. I think he tried to defer a little bit too much, and he's just back to being the great player that he is.
Chatting with Peter Labardius, our Flames insider here on Sportsnet Today. Joins us every single day to kick off the program. And of course, brought to you by our great friends at the Gemini Group. Lou, the top line was the one line that didn't change last night. Ruzicka, Toffoli, and Lindholm stayed the same. We saw changes throughout the rest of the forward group. What did you like? What didn't you like last night? I know me and Pat were talking in the first intermission last night that, hey, or I believe it was probably by the second intermission. I don't know if it was by the first one or not, but every line scored at 5-on-5. That's always a positive, but were there some lines that stood out to you in a more positive way than others?
Well, I was watching for lines, but more so just watching certain individuals, Logan, who needed to get going.
Okay.
So, you know, to see Andrew Mangiapane score for the first time since October the 20th against Buffalo. Huberdeau scored as the opening goal and looked, I thought, very comfortable. And made some great plays in that game that could have resulted in far more than the one goal he got. And he made a massive difference, I thought, to the Flames' number one power play unit, even though on the power play goal, he made the pass before the pass that was credited for the second assist. So So individually, I liked a lot of things. And, you know, I've said it yesterday. I said it last night. I'm going to say it again today. I'm nowhere near as concerned about this group's forwards and those combinations as I am with this team and its back end. And right now, they're having a miserable time finding somebody that they can play 12 to 14 minutes as a number six. And until they do, I don't truly believe this team is going to play the way it's capable of playing. Those pairings, having people healthy, and right now finding somebody, it looks like, you know, Dennis Gilbert is going to get a try, and he's a left-handed shot. DeSimone sent back, which would lead me to believe that potentially, you know, the Flames go back to, you know, three lefties with three righties, because that's what they have now available to them to start this very crucial trip, even though it's, you know, middle of November. I think this might be a season turning or put yourself in a dogfight the rest of the way type of trip. So that's, I know the forwards are the more popular and it's about scoring, but I'm way more about how this team checks and checks as groups of five. And it just, you are asking a lot of your defense when you can't play the sixth guy.
Yeah, that's something that Ryan Huska addressed last night, Lou, and talked about was, hey, we were down to five guys. Nick DeSimone only plays 7:26 last night. That puts your next lowest defenseman at 20:25. That's Mackenzie Weegar. Everybody else higher than that and goes as high as 24:43 for Rasmus Anderson, who's logged massive, massive minutes this season already for the Calgary Flames. And you mentioned it there, you know, Dennis Gilbert's back up with the team. He'll join them for this road trip. And, you know, ironic or not, it was one of those things that we talked so much about heading into this season, Lou, was, wow, what do you do with all of this depth and all the defensemen signed to these contracts, and what are you going to do? Well, all of a sudden, Yusuf Alamaki's not here anymore. He's claimed on waivers. Oliver Shillington's not with the team. Michael Stone is hurt. And all of a sudden, all that depth we've talked about, it disappears in a hurry, and you're getting a real, you know, taste of reality. It's not last year where you got away with as healthy a season as I can remember for most groups. This is what happens in the NHL, and you're going to need somebody to step up and fill that role.
Okay, here's the difference. And I personally feel like I always saw the difference. So there's one thing to have, you know, 9 or 10 potential bodies in your organization that can play. But Logan, the real difference maker is not what your contract says, or not the fact that you're close, but can you play in the league? And that's the difference, is the Flames made a decision with Yusuf Alamaki, and I think they had to. I just, to be honest, from what I had heard and what I had witnessed, and I just, by the time he left here, I saw a shell of the guy that came here. So it wasn't working. And, you know, lots of onus, I think, you know, on the injuries, and he's a pretty sensitive, heartfelt guy who cares deeply. I think he put a boatload of pressure on himself. So, you know, you sign people, you see their progression. And yes, in theory, with Milosh and Mackey, and you don't know who's going to get hurt, but, you know, they had Chris out for a while and, you know, he's come back and they've won twice. But they're having a heck of a time finding Michael Stone's 12, 14, 15 minutes. And they need to find it. So depth is only great depth when you can bring people up and they can actually get the job done. That's depth. That's true depth.
Yeah, that's what the Flames are looking for right now. We'll see if we get any more answers to that. I know Pat mentioned yesterday Michael Stone has not skated with the group since his injury. We obviously don't have any updates on Oliver and won't be getting any and won't be prying for any, for that matter. As much as people are going to ask, that's just not any of our business and one that we're not going to dive into either. So for the Flames, it's about finding that next guy. And right now, they're kind of rotating through the three of them right now between Gilbert, Mackey, and DeSimone to see who comes, you know, through for those minutes. And I wonder if Gilbert's not that guy, Lou, how long it is until we see someone like Nick Melosh up with the team to get a spin on that third pairing.
Well, the door is open until somebody takes control of the situation and until Daryl Sutter is satisfied with the play that he's getting out of that particular spot. And not just the spot. I should also reiterate that, yes, and led by myself in this conversation, we're talking about one. But it's more than that. It's defensemen play in pairings. So not only do you have to find the right guy, you've got to get to the point where whoever steps up finds, you know, a partner there where it's cohesive and you get out of that pairing what you need. So that it's not just that, yes, it's a one-way street in some respects, but it's about the pairings and going out there in that spot, however it gets, you know, settled, and whether, you know, right now I think you're probably more prone to have more balance than load up and hope, but it's a work in progress, and I truly believe this. If it and have they been unlucky this year with it? Yeah, you know, are we having these conversations, Logan? If Oliver Shillington is healthy, probably not.
No,
I don't think we are.
No,
but he isn't. So, and Michael Stone's not available right now. And let's add just one little piece. One of the reasons that Michael Stone didn't sign until very late and won the job on a PTO was, in your estimation, why?
Well, I thought it was trust, and I thought that he wanted to be in Calgary. That's where he wanted to be. That's why he waited it out and was willing to take a PTO, because this is where he wanted to play.
But don't you think it was more about the other guys who maybe they had on one-way deals that didn't take care of their end of the bargain?
Oh, yeah, 100%, yeah.
Yeah, so, and again, anybody who knows me knows what I think of Michael and the professional he is, and absolutely they have missed him greatly. But a big part of, you know, what's gone on here in that circumstance is they got a good player who I think is getting better all the time in Mackenzie Weegar, but some other guys that either they signed or have had in the organization, they're not cutting it for the coach right now.
Yeah, that's one of the things I've thought a lot about when we were talking all these weeks, Lou, about the new forward lines and the unfamiliarity and the guys bringing up chemistry, how quickly that changes for the defensive side of things. It wasn't just, we thought it was just going to be Gudbranson out and Weegar in, and you were just introducing one new guy. Well, all of a sudden Shillington and Stone aren't part of the conversation, and you're introducing a lot of new players and new faces into the back end that haven't played there before. That's a really tough thing to do for a unit that was pretty cohesive last year and didn't see a lot of that change.
It sure is. And it's, I'll debate this with anybody. I know the head coach feels very similar. It takes everyone, for sure. But when that group is not solid and your pairs aren't in good shape and they don't slot properly and you don't know exactly what you're going to get out of those pairs, and all three, not either one or two, or, you know, it needs to be three if you're going to be an elite type team. It just does.
Yeah. Well, we'll get set for the road trip. It's a travel day today for the Flames, Lou. They're getting set for six on the road, a couple of really interesting stops, and including one on Saturday against a familiar face in Florida. We got the Tampa Bay Lightning coming up on Thursday. Lots to get through the rest of this week, pal. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon. We'll chat again tomorrow, hey?
I sure will. Thanks, Logan.
There you go. Pete Labardius, our Flames insider. He's brought to you every single day by the Gemini Group. The Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovation should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group now offering air miles, reward miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca. I want to read a couple texts at the fan feedback line, 960. This texter says, shouldn't have put Valimaki on waivers. This is a tough one because I know Pat mentioned this on the Flames Talk post-game show last night. A few people wondered about this with him yesterday after seeing how few minutes Nick DeSimone got into. I'm kind of with Pat in the sense that I don't think it was ever working here. The success that Uso's found right now in Arizona is a very different circumstance than what was going on here in Calgary. It's very Sam Bennett to me. And maybe that's... maybe there's a conversation to be had about the organization in that sense, that the two guys that were first-round picks have found success elsewhere. I'm, as far as this conversation goes, to me, it's just I don't know that it was ever going to happen here. And at the time, you had all these other defensemen. I think putting him on waivers was more poor asset management than anything because he was a first-round pick. But I also don't know what the market is, so who am I to say? Does it look worse if you trade him for a fifth-round pick because that's all that's out there? I don't know. This text says, what about the elephant in the room? Our elite goalie is almost at the bottom of the league in save percentage. We won't score six every night. Find it odd this is not a conversation with you guys. The Jacob Markstrom thing just doesn't worry me. Has it been an up-and-down start? Sure, it's been an up-and-down start for him. He had a great game against Winnipeg on Saturday. Yes, last night wasn't perfect, and the numbers need to come up for Jacob Markstrom. He was a Vezina finalist last year. If anything, I'm surprised that this fan base that's, and I've lived here my entire life. I've gone through all of them. I've had conversations with my buddies about him. How quickly we miss or forget about the days where we were rolling through secondary and backup goaltenders here in this city. Hiller and Elliott and Ramo, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Markstrom has had ups and downs this season, but am I close to throwing under the bus for what's been? And no, and some of it's been, I mean, go back to some of these games, the defensive lapses that some of these Flames games have had because of the D pairings being out of sorts or missing a guy like Chris Tanev. There's a bit of that that's got to factor into it. I'm not saying it's all on them or it's not on him to get better. It is. The guy was a Vezina finalist last year. I'm not 12 games or 12 starts into the season panicked about it. This text says we're missing good Branson. I think you're just missing healthy bodies. That's that. I don't know. I was the first one to eat crow on this in last year because I thought the good Branson signing was going to be a nightmare. And he fit in well in Sutter's system. He was a great penalty killer. Would I have given him the contract that Columbus gave him? Not a chance in hell. And they're learning that right now. I don't think you're missing Eric Branson. I just think you're missing healthy NHL available bodies right now. You're at like 7-8 on your depth chart with guys like DeSimone. And that's not a shot. DeSimone should be in the AHL. That's just what it is. If Shillington was here and ready to go, if Stone was healthy, I don't think we're having that conversation. Anyways, that's the text line, 960-960. Always open for your feedback here on Sportsnet today. questions, comments, queries, anything you want to talk about. We'll keep the hockey chat going next. We'll bring in Julian McKenzie from The Athletic. We'll chat a bit about the Calgary Flames. We'll also chat a bit about his article from The Athletic today, the story of the Matthew Tkachuk, Jonathan Huberdeau trade. If you haven't read it yet, I would highly, highly recommend reading it because it's, first of all, Julian generally does great work, but this is just another key example of it. And the way that he breaks it down and gets sort of the inside view of all of this from all the different parties involved, pretty spectacular. I'm excited to talk about it with him next. Julian McKenzie joining the program after this break here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
You're listening to Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon on the home of the Flames, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Let's keep the hockey chat rolling here on Sportsnet Today. Logan Gordon along with you, and very happy to go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Welcome in, friend of the station, covering the Calgary Flames for The Athletic. It's my friend and yours, Julian McKenzie. J-Mac, what's up, pal?
Flash, man. I just have to say, almost every time I appear on this station, someone plays some amazing music to tap me in, and it's almost always something that I listen to. Who got access to my Spotify playlist?
Yeah, it's just
this is incredible.
The prods around here. That,
like, you were playing out of time. I was like, come on, man. Like, this is my jam, man. Like, appreciate so thank the love, you to man. Whoever is responsible for that.
Yeah,
thank
you. Shout out to the prods. Cam on the other side getting it done today. That's what we like. We like that kind of energy coming in, and lots to get to with you, man. It's been a busy morning for you. You dropped an article on The Athletic that's receiving high praise, and I can totally understand why, and we'll dive into that in just a couple moments. But you were at the Saddle Dome last night with me, and we were checking out the Flames and the Kings, 6-5, the final score. And I'll let the listeners in on a little bit of secrets, because I might have texted you when it was 6-4 L.A., or 6-4 Calgary, excuse me, and I might have texted you and said, kind of feels like 6-5 is about to happen here, doesn't it? And we both kind of texted each other like, yeah, I can kind of see this happening. And sure enough, it did happen, and we were a Jacob Markstrom point-blank save on Andrei Kopitar away from talking about the Flames blowing a three-goal lead. How did you see everything go down last night?
Man, I was listening to you talk about Jacob Markstrom a little earlier, just before I tapped in. And I get it. This franchise has seen a rotation of different goalies come in. And Jacob Markstrom is a Vezina caliber goaltender, at least what we saw from him last year. And on this station, I've defended him and said, like, hey, like, he's a guy who's trying to still get to his game. At the same time, like, I think it's more than fair to want better. I think when we spoke with Daryl at one point, I want to say last week, he had mentioned that the team's save percentage was pretty much among the lowest in the league, and it needs to be better. And I think the fact that Markstrom was able to make that point blank save near the end of that game, that's just a sign that, you know, Jacob Markstrom, when he's playing at his best, he's capable of making plays like that. But this team is still looking for a complete 60-minute effort, and they were close to getting it. I mean, one thing that's unfortunately going to be lost in all of this is the fact that they allowed four shots from LA in that second period. They did allow a goal, but they allowed four shots from LA. And if they had held on and made it just 6-3 and after 60 minutes of play, even if they would have allowed three goals, we would be talking about this performance as arguably their best of the season. Not just because of the fact that they scored six goals, but they found themselves in a position to hold on to a massive lead and hold on to it for the rest of the way and not let the other team back in. And LA, just look, they're a veteran team. They're going to apply that pressure, but Calgary has to find a way to shut the door and bolt it and lock it down completely and not let any team, whether they're veteran or whether they're a fast, quick, young team with energy, get back into the game. Like, they have to find a way to do that. And Jacob Markstrom, a lot of pressure is going to be applied on him. And again, I've defended him before. I'm not changing my tune on him, but like, I'm on the side that says he needs to be better.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I like where you went with that, because that's exactly kind of how we were talking yesterday as we were waiting to hear from what would turn out to be Ryan Huska in the Ed Whalen Media Lounge last night. Was, you know, Salum was there and Ryan Pike was there, and we were all sort of, you know, just chatting up like we normally do. We all kind of looked at each other and went, man, that third period goes a little bit more, even 10 minutes more like the second period does. And you just have a completely different feel about this game. Like the tone of it feels different. I think the players walk out of it feeling differently. But kind of as Huska said to us last night, Julian, it's hard to walk away and only look at the positives last night when you have a third period like that. Yes, you picked up the win, but at the end of the day, this group knows they can be better and sort of expects more of themselves. And it's been a problem that they've had all year long. And a lot of times those leads have, you know, not stood up in the third period and left them feeling even worse about themselves after 60 minutes.
Yeah, they're coming off a road trip where they had a bunch of those results where the game should have gone their way and it did not finish in their way. They had to, throughout that winless streak that they were on, you can point to a number of games where Edmonton, Seattle also comes to mind, where this team showed that they could play well and do what they need to do to put themselves in the lead. Correct me if I'm wrong. I know I initially tweeted the wrong number and I had to correct myself, but yesterday I think was the sixth straight game the Calgary Flames scored first. It was a problem for them about them starting on time. I think they fixed that problem, but yeah, it's all about finishing now. And that's something that has to get fixed for this team.
Yeah, 100%. And we'll see what this six game road trip brings for them, because there's some real tough opponents on this one, Julian. And I think we're going to learn a lot about this team over the next 2 weeks, starting Thursday in Tampa Bay. But look, we talk lots of Calgary Flames here on the radio, and it's always great to get your perspective. But today was especially important for me to get you on because of the story that you dropped at The Athletic, the story of how the Matthew Tkachuk and Jonathan Huberdeau sign and trade went down. And look, I'll be honest. I've really enjoyed getting to know you since you've been on the Flames beat, and we're good pals.
Likewise.
And, I'm happy to have you on anytime, but this really was a great piece, man. And I'm so curious, as a guy coming from out of market, and you know, not living the Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk day-to-day heroics that we've gone through here in Calgary, how did you get a good feel for what it meant to this organization and to this team to have Matthew Tkachuk say no to the Calgary Flames so quickly after Johnny Gaudreau left in free agency? Like, were you able to get a very full, encompassing picture of how that all happened and how the city felt?
I mean, as someone who's only been in the city for 2 months and was not around during the summer when all this was happening, I can't say that I will ever have a full picture of what it was like to have those two players say no. I mean, look, I can only imagine it from a distance, right? I mean, two 40-goal scorers, and I mean, that's just last year, but Johnny Gaudreau and Tkachuk, both players drafted by the organization, turned into first-line players, turned into all-star players on a Flames team that I hyped up for parts of last year as a team that I think they were built well with the structure that they had, the coaching that they had. And I saw them in that third round against the Colorado Avalanche. So I was very surprised when I saw Edmonton beat them. And the fact that both those players said, you know what, we are seeking greener pastures elsewhere from a distance. Like, I just thought that was super surprising. But the fact that they turned that into the Jonathan Huberdeau trade and eventually the Nazem Kadri signing, like, that takes a lot for any GM to do. So I think Brad Treliving will get some credit for making that work. But in terms of just trying to process that, like, I don't, like, man, like, that's just, that must be tough. Like, and one thing I realized too, just going to games and for those who don't realize, but like the press area, we have to basically walk through this little back way, go up this elevator, and you're walking through parts of the concourse to get to the little mini catwalk that gets to the press box. So all that way through, you are passing through legions of fans, and you're getting to obviously look down and see, you know, what jerseys they're wearing and all that. There's a great handful of them who still wear Matthew Tkachuk jerseys and Johnny Gaudreau jerseys. And not to go on a small side tangent here, but the one thing I will always think of because of that trade, and no disrespect to Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri, the one thing I will always think of about this trade is that there's a, it's star power being lost here. Like, Matthew Tkachuk, in just talking to him for this story and how he responded and how he just kind of came across, I sort of understand why he's seen as one of the more interesting personalities in the National Hockey League. And I get that the bar is a bit low considering how guys can talk in the National Hockey League, but Matthew Tkachuk definitely comes across as a person who didn't necessarily want to shy away from the limelight and was okay with that type of thing. And because of the play style of play, the name on the back of his jersey, that plays a lot into it. I can understand why fans would be hurt by the fact that a guy like Matthew Tkachuk would want out and would want to play elsewhere. Like, not only was he really good on the ice, but he came across as like a cool personality. And like, because of the way that he got under other people's skin, like a Drew Doughty, got booed yesterday.
Yeah.
And Matthew Tkachuk is nowhere to be seen in that. I can understand why people felt the way for Matthew Tkachuk the way that they did. And I understand it will also apply to Johnny Gaudreau too, but as someone who has only been in this market for as long as I've been, only about 2 months, and literally it's been, oh my God, it's November 15th. Logan, it's November 15th. 2 months ago today, I moved to Calgary.
Oh.
I've been here exactly 2 months today. Like, I will never be able to fully understand what he means, what Matthew and what Johnny Gaudreau mean to this market.
Why this article? I'm always curious from a writer's perspective, what called you to do this one? And if it's as simple as hey, my boss at The Athletic thought it was worth going down, or was there more to it? Why did Julian McKenzie want to explore this topic that's been explored so much already in this article?
Because I don't, like, it's the story. I mean, I don't know how. I remember like putting out a tweet about this yesterday that this story was going to drop, and like some dude wrote under it like old news. No, I'm sorry, dude. Like, what I mentioned earlier about people wearing Gaudreau jerseys, Tkachuk jerseys, and how we talk about trades, this is not going to be old news. We are going to study this trade for a long, long, long time, especially in this market. If Matthew Tkachuk goes off on the Calgary Flames on Saturday, or even if he doesn't even have that good of a game on Saturday, if he has a good game on November 29th at the Saddle Dome, oh man, can you imagine how people would react?
And yeah,
just, I don't know about buyer's remorse, but like, could you imagine how people would go off on that? This is a move that we're going to talk about for quite some time. I'm also a big fan of putting together oral histories, and I wanted to, I had it in my mind, like, I think even just before I started, I was like, you know what, it would be cool to do this. And then from training camp, just tried to get all the interviews I could together, and I don't know, just one after another, it just kind of worked out. And I said, you know what? We're going to find a way to tell the story in this way. And I just have to give a shout out to Israel Fair and Mark Wallerman for my two editors on the story, who were willing to let the story be as it is. I know I had to probably be under a certain little word limit, and there was some stuff that got cut. But like, I'm glad that the format that you guys are all able to read is the vision that I had for this story. That I'm happy about.
What stood out to you the most? Did anything surprise you going through this process? Because when I read it today, Julian, and I've been in the middle of it here. I went through it all summer. I was on air. I took phone calls with everybody. I didn't realize how much hurt feelings there were in this. Maybe to the degree that I realized it when I read your piece today. What stood out for you?
I think the hurt feelings are part of it, but it seemed like, at least from what I was able to gather, and some people are starting to pick up on it, there seems to have been, like especially from Huberto and Uyghur's situation, and Cole Schwint for a completely different reason, the lack of information being brought to them. Like Huberto, when he was talking to me, was saying, like, well, Bill Zito really only gave me, like, 10 words, and that was really it. And then Alan Walsh had to tell him, like, what was going on. And then Mackenzie Uyghur gets a phone call from Brad Treliving, and then he goes to his mom, and his mom is like, oh, yeah, Huberto's going with you. And, like, he just thinks, oh, I guess he found it out on Twitter or whatever. And Cole Schwint, the prospect who the Flames really want in this trade, again, there's a slightly different reason why he wasn't in the know, but dude was up in Sault Ste. Marie and like willingly cut off access to the world, and then had to discover it like the next day that he got traded. But especially for those two players, like Huberto and Uyghur, like it just seemed as if the fact that they were in a situation where it's like, oh yeah, you got traded, and they have no idea like how, like who's going with them or like why, like that I think is like the biggest surprise also, and I know Huberto kind of mentions it a little bit, and in terms of stuff that got cut, like one part I really wanted in the story was just a little back and forth between Alan Walsh and Bill Zito at the draft. And they're meeting in this like hotel room at the draft in Montreal. And Alan Walsh is under the impression that they're going to talk about an extension. And it doesn't seem as if that conversation is really leading to that. And then Bill's kind of like, well, you know, if there's any flexibility on there. And Alan's just like, you know what? Something's up. Something ain't right. So, like, I think just stuff like that where, you know, there's maybe a lack of communication, but also, you know, the interest from the Florida Panthers, this isn't just, like, I know Bill had mentioned to me that, like, oh, we got into negotiations maybe about 24 hours, not more than 36 hours before the trade was completed. But I really wonder, and I've had colleagues clarify to me, too, that, like, they had the Florida Panthers as a team who were interested in Matthew for a while, that interest in him, you know, like, I don't think that was that definitely, I'm not inclined to believe that was something that was just, you know, oh wow, by chance we could just get him. It's, you know, you think about it, you circle it, you know, I think that's something that probably might've been in the works for a while. And I can understand why a guy like Jonathan Huberto would be upset, because a guy who put a lot into Florida and probably thought he was going to stay, but ended up not being the case.
I don't want to spoil any more of it. It's really an outstanding piece, Julian. I highly recommend anybody that you know, has any interest in hockey in general and the workings of it, and how, you know, there's so many different things that go into this and how people see it and how people view it just months after. And I think you nailed it earlier when you said, man, this is something we're going to be talking about from, you know, different perspectives and views for a very long, very long time, and not only ahead of the next couple of weeks where the Flames will see Matthew Tkachuk in Florida, and then he'll have his return to the Saddle Dome on the 29th. This is something that we're going to dissect for a very long time to come. So I couldn't recommend it anymore. You can go to theathletic.com, or you can check out Julian on Twitter. He's at JKA McKenzie. You probably already follow him because he's a killer dude and he's on the Flames beat here in Calgary. J-Mac, appreciate the time as always, pal. Great work on this. You're getting tons of praise for it. You totally deserve it, buddy. Have a great afternoon. Thanks for hopping on with me.
Flash, thank you so much for the opportunity, man, and I'm looking forward to being back on you again soon.
Sounds good, pal. Take it easy.
Peace.
Julian McKenzie joining us, covers the Calgary Flames for The Athletic here on joining us on the Atlas Beats and Sports Bar guest hotline on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Once again, that article came out today from Julian, the story of how the Matthew Tkachuk, Jonathan Huberto sign and trade went down. Perspectives from both GMs, agents, Huberto, Uyghur, Tkachuk, Schwint, all of it is encompassed in this piece by Julian. Once again, if you want to find him on Twitter, at JKA McKenzie, really worth your time to go seek that one out from a Flames perspective, especially ahead of two matchups, like I mentioned, against Matthew Tkachuk coming up over the next couple of weeks. Some real insight into his thinking, the Flames side of things, how everything sort of worked down. I know we've been through it a lot, but I really thought Julian did an outstanding job bringing a fresh perspective to it. And there's a guy that's, like you mentioned, only been in the market for 2 months now, and he really got a great feel for Flames fans to see what a story that's going to define not only this season, but a lot of seasons going forward for the Calgary Flames. So appreciate Julian hopping on with us this afternoon. We'll wrap things up for Sportsnet today. We'll hand things over to the Hockey PDO cast with Dmitry Filipovich. That's coming up next. Don't miss Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Lots to dive into after that Flames 6-5 win over the LA Kings. Thanks to Julian. Thanks to Lou for hopping on. Thanks to you for listening. You can catch all of our interviews up at sportsnet.ca/960 or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Sportsnet Today here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.